So in a sense, the very first filter is that place of embodiment itself, right? So that's that place where we start to reclaim our relationship to our bodies, our relationship to our own subjectivity. It's where the Hebrew word malchut is given to it, which means kingdom. It's entering the kingdom of our own experience, really. And in a certain sense, then the next step that we're on, in a way, is this sense of the inner universe, the universe or the world card, where we find ourselves in this new world, really, a much more fluid, a world that's less about things and more about moving processes. And what we come up against as we step into that universe, that world, is then the interplay of this first triad. Now the tree of life really is the classic Kabbalistic tree of life is really based upon a vision of the universe seen from the earth in the Middle Ages. So the lower sphere is earth itself. The next one is the moon. The Mercury and Venus are the two on either side. Then we have the Sun. Then we have then we have Mars and Jupiter that are planets a bit further out. We have Saturn there, the field of the stars, and then the source of being called the primum mobile. So the template of the Tree of Life is an image of the kind of astrological archetypes, really, of the planets and the stars. And that is seen as an image, both as an image of the universe and as an image of our own souls. So each of those spheres is a locus or a cluster of meaning. So that Malchut has everything that's to do with earthiness, embodiment, the elements of earth, air, fire and water. The Yesod, called the foundation of life, is also the moon. So it is about things that are lunar. It is about images. It is about tidal flows. It's more watery. Mercury has the sense of the mind and the fastness and the speed of the mind. Venus, all the kind of feelings of the emotions and the feelings that you'd associate with the planet Venus. The Sun is the center point and the center point of presence and kind of connection. Mars is about clarity, about the kind of warrior kind of virtues. Jupiter is about growth and love and expansiveness. Saturn is the great mother, the great container. Now Saturn is the sort of furthest out planet at that time, and it's the great container of the kind of the universe, but it's in relationship with the next thing, which is the field of stars, seen as the archetypal fathers, archetypal mother, archetypal father. And then beyond that we have the image of the root of being, what they call the primum mobile, the place of the first movement. Now All these clusters of meaning really are about meaning in the universe, in the inner universe, and meaning in the smaller universe of our own psyche. So as we contemplate the template of the tree, which is a way of directing our attention so that we can little by little dissolve the blocks to our own unfolding. Now, the major blocks, there are lots of blocks, in fact, in between the because what the tree does is help us to relate to. So, for example, if we look at the thought and feeling down here, depending on our relationship to our own ability to think and our own ability to feel, that connecting path will be either clear and straightforward and so thought and feeling can work in harmony with each other, or could be a broken path or a convoluted path or a blocked path. The tree that we grow ourselves, so this is like a sort of neutral template, but the tree that we grow ourselves has all kinds of different shapes built into us, built from our own experience, our own relationship to life and what we have learned about ourselves and learned about the universe. Now, all the time we're working in a sense with our with a conjoined image, which is the image of me and the universe I live in. Now, these images always reflect each other. You know, it's that place where, you know, if you're like me and something bad happens, I start to feel sorry for myself. So it's poor Ian. Why does this always have to happen to Ian? Why does nobody appreciate Ian enough, for example? Not that I would ever think like that, of course. But let's say for the sake of argument, I am thinking like that. What I'm simultaneously doing is being with an image of myself, nested within an image of the universe, because part of poor Ian is the universe doesn't appreciate Ian. So it's a conjoined creation. The image of self is always connected to the image of an implicit image of the universe. And the key thing with all our images is they're all wrong. They're all partial. And there's a particular dynamic that those of you who've worked with me before will have heard me go on about endlessly, and I am endlessly going to continue to go on about it. Because the point of the image, an image can either be an icon, and if it is an icon, it takes us beyond itself into the uncreate light, into the mystery. So an image can point us into something beyond the image, in which case it changes the sense of who we are and the sense of what the world is. Or an image can act as an idol, and as an idol it can shape our experience in a particular form, and we end up serving the image. So in the image of poor Ian, if poor Ian can't get past poor Ian into something deeper, poor Ian and the universe and the uncaring universe that poor Ian has to live in becomes something that I create around. So I shape myself either defensively or aggressively in relationship to that image. So in the end, what we're seeking to do is to use images in such a way that they dissolve and they take us into something that's more alive and more mysterious, that generates fresh images that have new life, new possibility, multiply the possibilities of our life. So our first problem, really, when we look at this, is that next footstep of the fool is one that has to move from this field of thought and feeling and image into a sense of presence that's accompanied by qualities of clarity and love. Now, there's a thing that they classically call the veil of the temple that stops that from happening and filters experience. The veil of the temple is actually the constant inner dialogue that creates a screen against which our life is lived. It's a sort of the movie of our lives. So when I'm playing the movie of Puri, the tragic story of Puri in the universe that doesn't care about Ian, I completely star in that movie, right? I am the kind of, you know, the artist in the garret who nobody wants to buy his work, but one day they'll know, then that'll show them, you know. So there are these powerful little, actually quite simple narratives, but they're deeply unconscious, deeply implicit within us. And of course, they don't feel like bloody stories when they come up. They feel like, oh, this, I've just been hurt. I've been hurt, why are things like this? Why do people do this? Why people, you know, so you find all that kind of then primitive blaming, kind of projecting out happening, or projecting in, attacking yourself. So the need really somewhere is what, the overall need is to find ways to interrupt this constant dialogue, which enables us to start glimpsing, that's why it's a sort of dotted line at first, where you start glimpsing past the veil that is the screen of our own projections and beliefs and desires into something that I've called here pure presence. And the archetype there is the archetype of the sun. Now, it's why the ancient Egyptians used that the sun is the great god of Egypt, coupled with the Nile god. And it's the thing about the sun is that it's a central, warming, illuminating, immediate kind of place. It's like now we're in the sun, sunlight hits you, you know it. And there's a sort of a fierce quality in it that breaks things down. So we encounter it, so underneath, if you like, our sense of who we are is this presence, this stillness, that though it is still, is also quite fierce somewhere. And has the and it's partly why we can't really approach the sun directly until we have built a container that can hold and consciously hold and screen those energies.
Did you say it's more uncompromising?
Yes, very much so. It's a pure intuition that comes through when you know when that says this is right, you know, and it's got a kind of it's got that quality of clarity and that confidence, that the Jupiterian confidence behind it as well. So it's a sort of but it can be completely uncompromising in the sense of they've got to go this way, not that way. And here we're much more affected by collective senses, collective understandings, wanting people to like us. All the stuff that's been created at this level of ourselves that actually keeps us really it keeps us in a sense of ourself that, however uncomfortable, we know it has somehow become comfortable. Right, it's the known, because increasingly as we go deeper into all of this, more and more we're engaging with the experience of the present that is unknown to us. And that is a bit daunting and a bit frightening, because it's somewhere, it's a place that increasingly takes us into places where we have less and less conscious control and more a sense of participation in the unfolding of something mysterious. Now the path that links, so the major path really that the fool takes as he or she makes this step, she makes this link between the moon and the sun. And this is the card that's called, which Smith pack is called Temperance. We have this image of the angel. And we have this sense of two chalices mixing into each other. It's called art in the Thoth Tower, and there's a sort of much more dynamic kind of visualization of it in that. It's Temperance in the Smith-Waite. It's that one.
And what is it, the other one?
And it's art in that one. Now, in both cases, in these cards, we have this kind of angelic kind of figure that's mixing things together. In the Smith-Waite one, you've got this nice image actually of a pool with irises around it, and the angel has one foot on dry land, one foot in the water, and then there's a path going to mountains, which is where you see the sun. So it's like almost a graphic depiction of the journey that has to be followed. But the activity of the angel is to mix waters together. So it's combining opposites, and the Thoth Pack in a way does it more graphically. You've got this much sense of a fiery opposites coming together. Because the problem with the internal dialogue and the reason that this gets interrupted is that it has achieved a degree of stability. That's why I say it's like a standing wave. It's got its own shape, and if it can, it will assimilate new impulses into that standing wave, which is one of the reasons when you bring back experiences, they somehow fade away. Instead of staying with you and so in particular, the sense of energy and new life fades away and becomes dulled down because of the filter of the veil of the temple, which is the internal dialogue. So the activity of the angel is to stir all this up through dreams, through synchronicities, through impulses, it can be quite a disturbing experience somewhere. And it's intended to be a disturbing experience, because you're breaking down some of the components of the house that you live in while you're living in it. Increasingly, the need is to trust that mysterious place, that place that comes from behind the veil, which manifests as pure intuition. So it is that's the place where these very lucid images come from, when you do these very short meditations, or when you get just a sense sometimes of something that is true and you can't even put it into words. This is about learning the art of listening to the angel, listening to the deeper part of yourself.
You mentioned something about symbol or image moving and allowing a fresh image to arise.
Yes, that's right.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. The resultant effect of all this is because all these images, we have thousands of images somewhere in this place called Yesod. It's, in fact, the Kabbalists call it the treasure house of images. But those images are rather like the lily roots that Andy was talking about, in that all these images are sort of, they're all in movement, but they're all connected. So that what we have in the end is our sense of self and sense of world is a standing wave of images that are constantly layering on each other and reinforcing each other. So what happens is as you, in a sense, come through this second filter place and start to listen to that deep intuition, what happens is something starts to interrupt that interwoven standing wave, and new images, new possibilities start to arise. So our sense of self, we start, you know, when you do something you never thought you could do, and then you become somebody who can then do that. It's like that process where somewhere a new possibility, you see a new possibility, and then you become that new possibility. Maybe you discover you could sing where you never thought you could sing, or you kind of, you may be judging yourself all your life for being a hard-hearted person, you discover you're actually quite a kind person. Suddenly your sense of yourself and then the world that you live in alters significantly.
Perhaps answering the question,
yeah,
that you realise that you are actually, I always thought I was a kind person, actually,
absolutely, that's the other thing that you can discover, exactly, you can discover actually, and in a way, you can, that in itself then has new possibilities embracing in there, because you can look into, you can investigate your meanness in a way you never could before, because you didn't think it existed.
Because this is very alchemical, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
So you've got the fire and the water, and you've got the white and the red.
Yeah.
And that's presumably the sun and the moon.
Yeah, that's right. It's the alchemical path, this, in some ways, but in particular, right? Because it's breaking down. Because you've got a container. In both cases, you've got the chalices in that one. You've got this great cauldron here. So you form the container, and then what's happening then is a great sort of melting down, a breaking down of opposites, which then creates a pool of possibility out of which new things can start to come.
Moving from one chalice to the other, is it the same water as in the pool, or is it totally different
water? No, it's water that has been, we don't exactly know, but the water's going back and forth, and in some ways I suspect it is the water that's come out of the pool that's being mixed and clarified and changed, so that, because the image of the pool is that the pool can be very, if the pool is very still, it can reflect the deeper images. This is very turbulent or very clouded. So the image in this card is more the one of almost clarifying, purifying, cleansing the pond, so it becomes a reflector of the sun. Same thing is happening here, really, but it's a more dynamic kind of thing of you know, it's a sort of a Crowley image, really, where he's putting images together in a more dynamic kind of way and enabling something new to arise out of that. But the result of it is that here, when we come from here, my sense of who I am is, although it's formed out of motion, is actually quite solid. Here is me. increasingly you give over the control of your sense of agency to this deeper, more still kind of place. That though it appears more still, is actually more dynamic, more in touch, and is actively then, one of the images they have is about the angel descending into the pool of Yesod, into the pool of the personality, and changing it, transforming it, so that it can contain and reflect and hold more of the deeper layers of life.
So when you say deeper, you mean further up on that?
Right? Further up, yeah, further up is deep in this analogy. Further up is actually deeper in, the nearest the root. So it's the, so in a sense what you can see happens here in this template is that the place of the thought and the mind starts to open up as this, if you can imagine this descending downwards. So the presence starts to really inhabit the place of images, the place of the sense of who I think I am. The quality of love and confidence starts to inhabit the feelings, and the quality of clarity starts to inhabit the mind. So it's a sort of, it's actually a kind of opening up of the whole psyche, right? So it's a sort of, it's an ascent that is a descent and an opening. So that increasingly, the images of who we think we are and who we think the universe comes out of presence, and that kind of deep stillness, our minds become clearer, our feeling nature becomes more loving and confident.
It's like the quality of love is here, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, so that quality of love is very important because it softens everything. It opens things, and it's an expansive kind of feeling. And so what you start to see happening is the start of our sense of self and sense of world feeling closed in. It starts to open up. There's a spaciousness within it. And increasingly, in the movement between inside and outside, we have less filters, so we retain the continuity more. Because the major fall off in terms of filter is this movement back to who I think I am, because that who I think I am excludes quite a lot of experience, and we would have the memory of that a bit like we have the memory of a dream, like an echo. But we can't fully embrace it well until the sense of self opens so that we can know ourselves as more than we think we are. Now this is a sort of, so that would be like the second step of the fool. I'll just talk briefly about the third step and then we probably have a break. So in a sense, the third next step is the connection between this place, the heart, or which is the sun center, to the root of our being. So this is quite a long, big movement. The tarot cards that apply to these paths in the High Priestess. So in the Smith-Waite pack, it looks like that. Crowley pack, it looks like that. Yes, that's right. That's right. There's lots of crystal. There's a little camel there. There's a.
Did you do two cards here?
No, there's just one card. It's just that it's different in one pack from the other. So just I'm holding up two to show people which one it is, depending on which pack people have got. Mm-hmm. It's that one and that one. Mm.
PJ.
Oh my God! There's no escape, is there? He's everywhere. Boris Johnson is on the High Priestess card. You see, he is coming out of these. He's arising out of the deep. He's on his escape.
It's meant to be.
He's come to save us.
Yeah, but he's in the opposite. he's not in the sky, he's not in the central.
Yeah. No, well, that's certainly true. He's not. He's certainly doing opposites, is true. That's quite funny. I like that. Okay, now this sutta is a much deeper thing altogether. They call, and which why they give it the meaning of the great abyss. Very drama. Kabbalists love a bit of drama when they're describing things, but the difference, and there's a right in the middle of the abyss. They have this other sphere they call Da'at, which is the sphere of mystery. It's the knowing of not knowing. So the third step, in a way, is into mystery. Now that doesn't sound too bad. But if we just consider that the movement, in a way, from the place of image and thought and feeling here to present is a big step, because a big and disarranging step. This next step really is a step from the experience of duality into the experience of non-duality. And we have this mysterious kind of feminine presence sitting between the pillars of the opposites, and the Kohli card sitting behind a great veil. Taking us right into the heart of something that is deeply mysterious. And, you know, one of the phrases that they have about this step is that only Nemo can take this step.
What, the goldfish?
No one.
Sorry.
No one. Nemo is no one. But, so no one can only no one can take this step, because in a sense the sense of personal identity itself vanishes. Now, reality is that happens all the time. Moment by moment we dissolve and reform. The problem is that we don't know that. Our problem is we have a false sense of continuity. You know, very like the continuity again, you run a film. A film is composed of thousands of still photographs, still images that get combined together through speed and light to create a continuous, coherent narrative. Now, in a sense, our light source, we could say, really is this place that's the root of our being. Now, this root of our being place works with what I've called deep will and deep imagination to continually create impulses that are all the time moving out of that center point, coming down into, through all the different layers of ourselves, into expression just here and now. But that isn't how we experience ourselves. We experience ourselves as just me sitting here doing my thing, making choices. You know, the sense of being no one doesn't apply. And they do something clever with this sphere called Da'at, because this means knowing. Knowing is the great veil here, which means pretty much knowing anything, and in particular knowing who I am. So there's a real sense of it, you know, a death has to happen here somewhere. The death of myself, not just the death of myself, but the death of the universe that I live in. It's an act of surrender that takes me truly beyond the known. Now, I've had a training in being beyond the known by being with these kind of qualities of presence and love and clarity that sort of open up our field. And that, in a way, prepares the way for, because at a certain point, what happens often when you're touching this layer of yourself is a sense of abandonment, a sense of emptiness, a sense of the things that used to hold me, my intuition, my ability to love, my ability to be clear, deserts me entirely. I'm not clear. I'm not loving. I'm not even present. And the challenge, really, of that moment is to stay there. And if we can stay there, even if we can just stay there for a moment, we touch something else, something that is beneath, which is this little triangle that is about being, is about deep will and deep imagination, that really is the, if you like, the root creative source of our being. Deep will, deep imagination, and being, deep being, source, root.
So if you're not all those things, what are you?
That's the question. It's not this, I'm not that, so you're not Fay, you're not, I'm not Ian. I am Fay, you are Fay, I am Ian, but where I, but there's a place where therefore I am Fay and you are Ian, where we go beyond separation, where we, in a way, we enter the place where what is there then is an interconnected something, which once we put it into words, we lose it, right? Because it any expression then is only part of a truth. And it's not to say you do nothing, you respond, but you respond as no one. It's a great Hasidic story. The rabbi and the cantor in a synagogue are praying together, and they're saying, "Lord, we are nothing before your glory. Lord, we are nothing before your glory." They're really getting into this and the guy who sweeps up the synagogue thinks, "This is good," so he joins in. "Lord, I am nothing before your glory." And the other two stop and look at him. Look who thinks he's nothing. Because of course even nothing can then become something, and nothing has become something. So the really deep challenge, really, of this third step is to tolerate the absence of meaning, the absence of solidity. Can, and at first it is experienced as a very dark place, because it's experienced first of all as absence. Okay, and that's a necessary condition, that absence, because the absence is the emptying out of all the known. And then if you can tolerate that without filling that up again, and then in actual fact it's like a movement back and forth, because nobody can actually just stay there. But as you increasingly return to that place and touch that place, again you start to get a taste, not a glimpse this time, more a taste. It's more intimate, it's more central. So you get the taste of something that isn't a thing, but that holds you somewhere in the heart of the mystery. Now, what you start to do, and in terms of this template, what you're touching on then are these archetypes, the archetype of the planet Saturn, the field of stars and the primum mobile. So you're touching a sense of something that first of all might seem like the planet Saturn, that is this great container that grinds you down slowly. That is, you know, Saturn in terms of astrology is the planet that holds you in place, that actually oppresses you. And in a certain sense, it does this movement, is this oppressive grinding, you know, grinding. It's sort of like a polishing, the really grinding down movement that takes away the residues of the sense of the known. Now, alongside that, you start to open into the great field of the stars, which means you start to open. Again, the image is just a helpful reminder. It's an image, it's not the truth. It's an image that points to the truth, that you're entering in beyond the world of the solar system into a much bigger world. And the image of the stars is a great field of generation and of simplicity and power. The great aim of the Egyptian traditions was to become one with the stars, and in that place then you are connected. So you are, if you like, entering into this place of stillness, that slowness that seems to be just grinding you down, but also holds the possibility of the field of stars, and you're connected to something that is beyond all knowing, which is the root place. And so there's a quite considerable kind of deconstruction involved in that, as you might imagine. But the other thing that's the trouble is, when you say that and when we talk like this, then it makes it sound like a remote place. And to live in that place is, of course, remote. It takes a lot of work. But the reality of this is, it's not a place that has to be constructed. It is the place that is. The construction happens further out, in a sort of reflex away from, a movement away from that deep place. So there's a sort of a sense of ourself, our presence, our capacity to love, our capacity to be clear, which is quite an expanded and open sense of self, but has a sense of self. That's what happens, really. It's a bit like this, that there's a prismatic movement that happens here from the simplicity of interconnectedness into a kind of sense of difference, separateness. So there is me and there is you. And it's still a very expanded sense. So there's a sense of me loving you, me connected to you, me clear, me not kind of sort of hating you, but loving you and loving the world and being very present. So remarkable. And this is quite a, if you can embody these qualities, that's quite an astonishing achievement for a human being, really. And then there's, of course, a further filter when we kind of can't hold that. We come more into this, much more, here we really are in the sense of the known, the completely known, but still having a sense of our agency. Right down here, we lose agency completely, and we're just in the middle of the energies bouncing back and forth all the time. But actually, the reality of who we are is this. So right at the center of our experience is that. But there are these powerful filters that stop us really knowing and sustaining our connection to that place.
So are you very much describing a tree that's upside down with the leaves sort of blowing in the wind at the bottom and the root just being at the top?
That's right. That's right, yeah. I mean, that's right, because originally, I mean, this is called the Keter, the crown of the tree, but they also call it the root of the tree. So in a sense, in a way, it is like that. If you like, the actual actions, the leaves, the fruit, are seen in here, in the outer place. And that meditation we did with the lotus is about that sense of descending down through the layers, eventually into the indescribable. Which is where you come to the sense of space that has no kind of, that has no context at all. And so that's moving through a lot of layers in order to get that. And in a way, that's in a way what the Egyptians meant by the becoming a companion of the blue lotus, was you are able to descend into the waters of the beginning, to be refreshed by that, and to arise and continually arise in new forms, continually to connect to the energy of the beginning, and to bring the blessing, the fragrance of that beginning, back into the world. Allowing that to close up again in the new, and then descend again. So that meditation we did just after lunch is, it holds everything that I've been talking about.
But we're always breaking down. Yeah, I mean, people have breakdowns, but that's at different levels.
Well, at this point, what we're doing, seeking to do in this, there is a breakdown in it, but we're seeking to do it in a controlled way.
Exactly.
Right, that's the difference, right? So obviously, there's all kinds of ways. I mean, sometimes, you know, one of the things that can happen to people, sometimes they can, psychedelics used to do this all the time, where it would actually throw you into this experience. But because there was no connectivity between the different layers of yourself, then trying to live with that transcendental kind of experience alongside a psyche that isn't adapted to hold that absolutely created havoc with people. So what we are doing here, what this process is about, is it's slow, but it's designed for the breakdowns, the filters, to come out naturally in a controlled way, so that there are points in it which actually are quite difficult. I mean, both these transition points, well, actually all three of those transition points are quite hard points and involve a reorientation of yourself. But it's held. There's a sort of a containment around it and the directionality in it that helps you to do it little by little. You're not diving into it. It's why I think some of the, you know, very violent spiritual methods as well never really work that well. You know, if anyone ever remembers Est and the sort of, they would do these full-on dramatic things, and it isn't that they didn't have effect. They produced very, very powerful effects sometimes. But then the problem was there was massive lack of integration in the psyche of the person. Living with that then became incredibly difficult, and often people weren't able to do that very well. So the whole point about these processes is that as we just keep leaning into, keep working with them, they kind of naturally unlock themselves. And little by little, we discover that we are completely different, and the universe is completely different from how we thought it was. Let's stop for a break, and we'll see what happens next.